Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today.
Just a heads up, there's some questionable or inappropriate language in this episode, so be advised, you may not want the kids to be listening to this one with you.
Dude, I have no idea where we are.
What?
Is it a hitchhiker?
What the hell?
Should we pick him up?
And get chopped to bits? Are you crazy?
Hey, you know what? We're lost. He may know how to get back on the highway.
Get back on the road. This is my car, and we are not picking up a hitchhiker, man.
Hey, guys. Thanks for picking me up.
Oh. Excuse me. Are you Neil Patrick Harris?
Yep.
Oh my God. What are you doing
Holy
here?
Holy shit. Dude, Doogie Howser MD was like my favorite truck growing up. You were my idol.
Yeah, that's great. Can we get going? I'm bored as shit back here.
You guys are so stoned. You're not even really asking, why are you on the side of the road and we're picking you up?
Listen, a comet falls in your backyard. You don't call NASA. You're just dealing with the cleanup.
Welcome to That Scene with me, Dan Patrick, an Amazon original podcast where I get to talk to Hollywood's top actors and directors about some of the most iconic scenes that have defined their careers, helped shape the cinematic landscape, and even become fixtures in pop culture. On today's show, we're joined by actor John Cho. He was born in South Korea in 1972, moved to the United States in 1978, where he was raised in Los Angeles. John attended Berkeley and toured nationally with the Berkeley Repertory Theater in 1994. After graduating from college, John became an English teacher while pursuing acting. After a slew of supporting roles in comedies like American Pie and Down to Earth, John landed a starring role in the 2004 stoner comedy Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, where he played Harold, not Kumar. John was able to shake off the stoner stereotype when he was cast as Sulu in J.J. Abrams' 2009 Star Trek film and its subsequent sequels. Currently, John is playing Spike in the live-action adaptation of the anime series Cowboy Bebop. Cowboy Bebop is set to be released November 19th. The scene in question today comes from Harold and Kumar Go to White Castle, where Harold and Kumar pick up a hitchhiker, who just happens to be Neil Patrick Harris. Had you been to White Castle prior to doing that movie?
I thought it was a made-up burger joint for the script. I hadn't had the pleasure. I did eat a bunch for the movie, and I gotta say, they're pretty yummy.
Oh, wait, no. That's wrong.
I can't remember if it was before or after, but I was in a Chicago bar. And I can't remember why I was in Chicago, but it was like towards closing, and somebody brought a cardboard briefcase, a blue and white cardboard briefcase. And the contents were a bunch of small burgers in boxes. My mind was blown.
White Castle played a large role in my life growing up. In Ohio, usually after 11 o'clock at night, after you'd been out, I don't think anybody ever had White Castle prior to 11 o'clock at night. It just felt like, I don't know. Well, just like you guys.
Yeah.
Might have had the munchies, might have had something to drink, and you're like, White Castles. I never had White Castles before 11 o'clock at night, I don't think.
Yeah. Doesn't occur to you before 11.
Hey, look here, fellas. You guys gonna have to order from the drive-thru menu.
What happened to the White Castle?
What?
There used to be a White Castle right here in this location. Where is it?
I hate to be the bearer of bad news, guys, but Burger Shack, they bought this location about 4 years ago.
God. Please tell me there's another White Castle in town.
No.
Are you sure?
Do I look like the kind of brother that would be unsure about something like that?
What are we gonna do?
I don't know, man. Should we just eat here?
Hey, psst. There's a White Castle that's open 24 hours up in Cherry Hill. It's about 45 minutes from here.
I can make the trip if you're willing to.
Kumar, I got a shitload of work to finish.
As a Burger Shack employee for the past 3 years, if there's one thing I've learned, it's that if you're craving White Castle, the burgers here just don't cut it. In fact, just thinking about those tender little White Castle burgers. Those little itty-bitty grilled onions that just explode in your mouth like flavor crystals every time you bite into one. Just makes me want to burn this motherfucker down.
Who convinces Neil Patrick Harris to be in the movie?
I'm struggling to remember, but I'm pretty sure it was John Hurwitz and Hayden Schlossberg who wrote the script and had written him into the script. So it wasn't a stunt casting thing. They wanted Neil. I think he didn't want to be called Doogie within the scene to his face. But other than that, he was just game and he came in guns a-blazing.
And then, of course, you say as soon as he jumps in, aren't you Neil Patrick Harris? And I love that he just jumps on it right away. I think that's what's the great shock of the scene is he embraces that it is Neil Patrick Harris.
I think he said, I asked him, aren't you Neil Patrick Harris? And he went and he threw up a gang sign. He went, yep. Maybe the single greatest acting move of all time.
Like, you guys are so stoned, you're not even really asking, why are you on the side of the road and we're picking you up?
Listen, a comet falls in your backyard. You don't call NASA. You're just dealing with the cleanup.
What was your favorite line that he had?
At the end of the film, he walks away. There's a way that he looks toward the sun, then he puts on his shades and walks toward the orb. And that to me, he's such a brilliant actor, but it's those little things I go, how's he coming up with this? He's unbelievable.
So I gotta ask you, Neil, did you ever get it on with Wando off the set?
Dude, I humped every piece of ass ever on that show.
Even the chick who played the hot nurse?
No, I didn't go all the way with her.
Neil, you wouldn't happen to know how to get on the highway from here, would you?
Dude, I don't even know where the fuck I am right now. I was at this party earlier tonight and some guy hooked me up with this incredible ex, and next thing I know, I'm being thrown out of a moving car. I've been tripping balls ever since.
At one point when you guys go in the convenience store, he starts humping the back of the seat there.
He gives me $100 to clean up my back seat. He was definitely playing the character Neil Patrick Harris, and there is significant divergence from the person and the character.
But when you get the script and you look through this, what are you thinking?
I'm thinking, damn, this is funny. It's also super dirty, and it's really smart. I think the thing that distinguished it from other comedy scripts I'd read was it's really irreverent take on race. In scripts, it was typically with kid gloves and with, you know, and trying to say the quote right thing and all of that. And this had a completely different take on race. It was just going for jokes, which I just loved.
You weren't worried about stereotypes?
No, I thought it was actually kind of pushing against stereotypes, you know, presenting Asians as stoners and and really losers. And I do remember, though, someone at a screening, an Asian American woman came up to me at a screening once and said, John, I want to thank you so much for representing us. And I was expecting Asian Americans. And she said, us stoners.
We're going to die.
No, now, hold on. Cheetahs are used to eating gazelles and shit. They're not known for eating humans.
Oh, that is a corpse. We're going to die.
Shit, that's not a good sign. Maybe if we just stay really, really still, don't just go away.
Okay. Just stay really still. Don't move, okay? Just stay right
okay.
There.
Very good. Good job.
This isn't working.
Oh! Whoa! Oh! Ah! He's following me! He's following me! Ah! Oh!
Oh! Ah! 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 Dude, I told you not to bring the beef jerky.
How close were you and Cal when you guys started shooting this?
Well, we didn't know each other when we got cast. I mean, we just met at the auditions, and then I recall going to Toronto to shoot the film and knocking on his hotel door and saying, let's get a beer. We are supposed to be friends, and we just got on like gangbusters. We do have a connection to this day. Like, we don't talk all the time, but I always say that, like, there's two guys that know that what it's like to be Harold and Kumar. It's like the Beatles to me. They all know. They all have an intimacy because they went through this exact experience together.
But how much is ad-libbed? How much is scripted?
For me, I'm not much of an ad-libber. I like to work changes out between takes. And I was the straight man in the movie, so I was more precise. Cal's a big ad-libber, and he's really brilliant. A dirty ad-libber. Most this is unscientific, but I would say 46% of the dick jokes in Harold and Kumar were improvised by Cal. 47.
Is there a line that you're proud of that you delivered?
I think it was, did Doogie Howser steal my fucking car? It's the one that comes to mind.
I looked at some of the supporting cast that you had. Ed Helms was in there.
Yeah. Ryan Reynolds.
I didn't remember Ryan in there.
He was in the first one. He played a surgeon. He had a surgical mask on for most of it. We're really smart.
Yeah, let's cover up his moneymaker there, John.
We were stoned, Dan.
It's a good thing I found you, too. All the other surgeons are working on other patients.
No. There's been a mistake, you see.
Excuse me. What Dr. Lee is trying to say is that we need to sedate the patient or he could go into cardiac arrest.
All right, I'll get the anesthesiologist.
Hang on a second, nurse. What we should probably use is marijuana. That'll sufficiently sedate the patient for surgery.
Marijuana? But why?
We don't have time for questions. We need marijuana now, as much of it as possible.
Were there any hesitations in taking that role?
I was afraid of getting typecast and put in a hole. But I also felt like, you know, what did I have to lose at that time? You know, so I was willing to take the risk. But I definitely wondered whether I would be playing Asian American stoners forever.
Any similarities between you and your character at that time in your lives?
You know, Cal and I always say that at the time, he was much more of a straight man in his life. And I was wilder than him, and I was more of a Kumar. So we kind of had to, it was funny, because I would be the one, you know, needling him and he was just so buttoned up in real life. And then the cameras would roll and he would just become Kumar. It was hilarious.
What is it about that with people that there's something about that is magic on the screen or their face pops off the screen?
I don't know. And he's just absolutely fantastic at playing that character. And I don't know how he got it. And I don't know how he got it when he's so different in real life. I mean, when I saw him, I was reminded of an experience I had when I was starting out, which was I was a day player on Goldfinger, which was a Steve Martin, Eddie Murphy movie. I don't want to brag, Dan, but I was the club janitor in that movie. Okay,
and one of the great club janitors that I've ever seen. If I can build you up a little bit higher there, John.
We established I take all compliments, so thank you.
And I loved you in Squid Game, too, I just want to say.
But I did see, I remember seeing Eddie Murphy come onto set, and he was just so quiet. And then it was like C-3PO, you know, the button that C-3PO has in the back of his neck. He just went, nink, and they called action, and he was Eddie freaking Murphy. And I couldn't believe it. It was so magical.
There's method acting, John. Were you stoned in the movie?
I was not stoned in the movie. I was trying desperately to be awake for most of the movie instead of going the other way. Because we shot on location at night, shooting at night and sleeping during the day. And it is not something your body wants you to do. So I was trying to take anything that brought me up rather than down.
And how do you play that in a, it's one thing to be like that in real life, but when you're in a movie playing it, do you play it larger for laughs?
You know, I tried to play it like I remembered it.
Well, that was my not so coy way of getting around to asking you, John, had you been high before that? So you were drawing on, you know, prior knowledge.
Yeah. Yeah. I was drawing on prior knowledge. Not a whole lot of prior knowledge, but prior knowledge.
Wow. Well, that comes to $46.75.
Dude, where's my money?
Hey.
You don't have money?
Dude, are you kidding me?
No.
No! Dude, this isn't happening, all right? We didn't make it here, and now we're broke.
No!
Hey guys, let me pay for it. It's the least I can do.
What the hell are you doing here?
You guys kept talking about White Castle last night so much, it made me start to crave it, too.
Dude, where's my car? Where's his car, dude?
Yeah, sorry about that. I told you last night I was tripping balls. I don't know what came over me. Your car's in the parking lot. Here are your keys.
Did you realize what the hell we had to go through after you took the car?
Yeah, it was a dick move on my part. That's why I'm paying for your meal.
Was there a moment when you knew that this was going to be big?
Harold and Kumar?
Yeah.
I don't recall one moment because it performed poorly at the box office. I recall very specifically We don't do it anymore, but back then, if you had a movie opening, you might, the producers and the director and the lead actors might rent a limousine and go from theater to theater in the area to check out how the crowds were liking it. When we did that night, and it was just empty theater after empty theater, it was the most depressing limo ride of all time.
Does it crush you that nobody cares about this movie you just spent X number of weeks filming?
Oh, yeah. But there's a bunch of layers of it, too. It's like, okay, well, one, I love it, and I want people to love it, too. So there's that disappointment. And then there's people put money into this, and they're disappointed. And then it gets ugly. You're like, will I ever work again? And, you know, will they, is it my fault? And all this stuff. So it was definitely a spiral of bummerness that was tough to get out of. Really, it wasn't until months and months later that I was like, after the 1 trillionth, yo, what's up? What's up, Kumar? After the 50th cab driver gave me a joint, I thought, maybe some people are watching this.
They're not very observant, though, John, because here you have Kumar, who is Indian, and you're not Indian, but they keep calling you Kumar. But
Dan, I'll take it.
They were close.
I'll take Kumar. I'll take what I can get.
Who do you get mistaken for?
Oh, I've been congratulated for my work in Heroes. I've been congratulated for my work in The Hangover. I've been congratulated for my work on Lost. And again, Dan, if there's a theme to this podcast, it's I will take undeserved praise.
And those people coming away and they're saying that they met somebody from these shows. And
hey, listen, to my credit, if I run into those guys, Daniel Day Kim or Ken Jeong, I'll say, hey, I met a guy and he likes your show.
Now, if you did go back or just said, no, stop bothering me, then they might go, hey, Ken Jeong, what a jerk, man.
There you go. I actually should employ that to destroy Ken Jeong's career.
How do you explain the success of those movies?
They're funny, first and foremost. And then I think they're memorable because of the casting, really. At the time, it was such a revolutionary thing to have an Indian and a Korean guy leading a movie. And I think it distinguished us in the marketplace. So I think it was easy to remember. And it's got the strangest title of all time.
Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
When you choose Organic Valley, not only will you be enjoying great tasting dairy, you'll help to save over 1,600 small organic family farms who are protecting over 400,000 acres of organic farmland and all the plants and animals that call it home. This is dairy you can feel good about. It's great tasting, high quality organic dairy, ethically sourced from small organic family farms. To find Organic Valley Dairy near you, visit ov.coop. That's ov.coop.
What did your family think when they saw this?
I think they were just happy for me to be in a movie at long last, you know, and I think that their pride overrode any embarrassment they might have felt. And I think for my immigrant parents, they thought, well, this is going to sound slightly insulting, but this is what the American young kids like. I guess that's what young people dig.
Okay, but you get a great education. Berkeley, what, an English degree, and you get out, you're a teacher, and then all of a sudden, what's the conversation like when you say, I want to be an actor?
They were just really worried about me paying rent. They were like, that doesn't seem like you can pay for groceries with that. I think my dad said, I was recalling recently when I told him that I wanted to be an actor, he said, you sure? How about, maybe you want to be a news anchor? He thought, they seem to allow Asians to read the news on television. The rules seem to allow you to do that. And I said, that's not what I want to do. And then I think he said, well, maybe you can make a movie one day that tells the story of Korean Americans. I think he was looking for an angle to make himself feel better. So maybe he was looking for a service angle there.
Is there going to be a Harold and Kumar 4?
We have talked about it amongst ourselves. And if there's a great idea, I'd be open to it. I don't know. Politically, it's the country's changed so much from when we made the first one. And the movie was filled. All three movies are filled with a lot of political zingers. And I don't know whether we could continue in that vein in 2020. What year is it? 2021. Yeah.
Wait, are you stoned right now?
Yes, it's 11 in the morning here.
What brought you to Cowboy Bebop?
They brought it to me, and I was not familiar with Cowboy Bebop. I'm not sure why it had kind of passed me by, but it wasn't something I was aware of. And so I read the script and then watched the anime and fell in love. It's a completely unique piece of entertainment. The anime is the music. It starts with the music, but for me, the attraction was the character and how many genres it touches. You know, it's sci-fi, it's film noir, it's a western, and it's action. I just thought it was kind of a way to round my fantasy bases, touch them all.
Music plays a large role in this.
Yeah.
Are you a big music fan?
Sure. This was, for me, Yoko Kanno, the composer, she just makes atypical choices in almost every scene. You know, there's some of the stuff in the, obviously there's a lot of jazz, a lot of scoring, but there's like a lot of pop music. Like even like 80s ballad stuff is in there. I just felt like it was completely idiosyncratic in a great way.
How many stunts did you perform?
I tried to do what I could. I just avoided dangerous things. Although I did not well enough. I did tear my ACL when we first were attempting to film in 2019.
Oh, no.
I went home and got surgery, production shut down, and then we resumed in 2020.
And then the next time they did the scene, somebody else did the scene?
Somebody else did the scene.
Any similarities with you and Spike, your character?
Spike's way cooler than me. Spike is a martial artist, unlike myself. I mean, that was for me the big challenge of the role, was to contribute as much as I could on in that way. If there's one similarity, I think he is apt to not want to share a whole lot about himself. It's sort of the journey of our season one, is to discover who he really is, because he is putting up a front.
What is it about that, though, that you don't like sharing?
For me, it's a lot of being an actor and wanting to keep my private life private. You know, there is a big portion of your life that is public, and you want to reserve as much as you can that only your loved ones know. I have found that that's essential to my sanity.
Imagine walking out, going to Starbucks or wherever, and everything you do is being recorded or somebody is watching. You know, these big time stars, you know, Brad Pitt gets on his motorcycle and paparazzi's there.
I don't know what it's like, because I'm not famous the way they are, and I don't know what that's like. And, you know, it multiplies exponentially if you're also dating someone famous. So I don't know what that's like. I don't know whether there's any upside to it. There must be some upside. So, yeah, that seems very, very difficult. I don't know how you do everything in the public eye. I don't know how anything gets done.
I'm pretty lucky, because I got a niche audience. It's usually guys who are a little bit older, and they don't scream your name or throw clothes at you or anything like that. It's pretty much they just want to say hello, buy you a beer, or ask for an autograph.
I feel like you and I probably have a similar experience. Most people feel like, you know, friends that I haven't met yet, you know.
Well, but also, John, I've been in people's homes. Like, you allow me in your home. And if you, my radio show, you allow me in your car. So I get people who think they know me, even though we've never met.
Yeah.
And it's a great compliment, because then it feels like I'm doing my job of just being myself. And you feel like you're comfortable enough to walk up to me. If there was a big time movie star, I mean, if Brad Pitt was in the room, I don't know if I'd walk up and say, hey, Brad.
Yeah.
You know, I would probably be a little bit more reticent about doing something like that. But sports fans, you know, they're like, hey, what's up, dude? Hey, you want a beer? Hey, what do you think of my 49ers or whatever it might be?
There's also like an intimacy, added intimacy of listening to someone on headphones or in your car that's different from the intimacy that you perceive when you're watching someone. I don't know exactly what it is. I listen to a lot of podcasts now, and I feel a deeper connection to the podcasts I listen to than a lot of shows I watch. And I think it's because it's a private experience, that I'm not ever listening to a podcast with my wife or kids. I'm always listening to it alone, you know?
You touched on something, and it was a great point, is that there is that intimacy. If I'm in the car with you, it's just you and me, and I can speak to you. If you put on headphones and you listen, I mean, I'm even closer to you. And you don't get that when you have a movie or a TV show, because you can be watching with other people or doing other things, you know. But I do love that chance to connect with somebody in a really, really private way.
Yeah. It's very intimate. It reminds me of, I wasn't alive for this, but from what I understand, the radio era was, it required, I think, a deeper level of concentration from the listener versus the viewer of a television show. You know what I mean?
I think it's called parasocial relationships.
Explain, please.
I just think it's that it's social, but it's you and me. So that,
right.
The relationship is, yeah, I mean, I think that's a fancier term for it. I should have just shut up and, you know, not tried to, you know, act like I went to Berkeley or something. Right? Yeah.
Well done, though.
Do you wear Berkeley? Do you wear Cal stuff around? Just, like people from Harvard, if I said to you, you can never wear something that says Harvard on it, would they have still gone to Harvard? And I mean, maintain that a lot of those people wouldn't. Do you like to let people know you went to Berkeley?
I don't have any Berkeley stuff. I'm sorry, anyone listening, go Bears. And I will say, I'm going to disagree with you about the Harvard people. You know, another podcast I listen to, Conan O'Brien, he never mentions the word Harvard. He says it's a terrible thing to go to Harvard, because whatever you do, if it's not Secretary of State, people consider you a failure if you went to Harvard, because the expectations are so high with that name.
Okay, I can buy that. Are you going to be typecast now with, you know, you had Star Trek and now you have, Cowboy Bebop?
You know, it'll be what it'll be. If I'm typecast as bounty hunter that can kick ass, I'll take it.
How about an outer space stoner? Harold and Kumar go into space.
I'm buying.
You know what I get? I get Jeff Bezos or Elon Musk, and then we'll use their rocket ship, and then we send you guys up, and then you guys weren't planning on going to the moon. You just end up there.
I like it.
No, John, no, you don't. You shouldn't like that. No.
I do think, though, that I love the idea of old stoners, like they have kids and a family life, and they're still trying to maybe they're using vape pens now and still trying to get it in.
Who's your favorite stoner of all time, cinema wise?
Oh, Jeff Lebowski, the dude. That's one of my favorites. Jeff Bridges is suspiciously good at playing stoned.
I don't think there's anything suspicious. I just think he's good at playing stone, John. Matthew McConaughey in Dazed and Confused.
Oh, he's pretty good. Oh, good. Yeah, that's right.
Have they ever put a list of movies, top stoner movies? And where would Harold and Kumar be on that list?
I'm unaware of an AFI Greatest Stoners stoner movie list.
Let's create one.
if we're not cracking the top 10, I'm going to be pissed.
Then it's going to be all for naught. Then, you know, your parents will say that, you know what, you disappointed us.
What if we came to, we left Korea for this.
Do your kids understand all this?
A little bit. I think we worked really hard at keeping them out of it. Like, we'd never take them to premieres or anything like that. But lately, I think they are more aware of it due to having to travel more and more for it. For instance, we shot the show in New Zealand. And I think before, when they were younger, it was more just daddy's going to work. But now, having to travel and pack bags, we have to explain to them what I'm doing.
How was New Zealand?
What a dump. No, it was unbelievable. And
no, John, I'm going to stop the podcast right when you say, oh, what a dump. And then I'll say, and we want to thank John for joining us on that scene.
It's a beautiful country with beautiful people. And we shot the show last year and during COVID, and they were COVID free. So it was a beautiful place to be.
Is there a version of your story you want to tell?
You know, I don't know if I'm oriented that way. I think some actors do want to reveal their stories. I was just reading Cal Penn's autobiography, or he just released a memoir. He has produced a sitcom and brought his experiences from the White House to a show. And I'm a little more hesitant. I feel like I'm the kind who got into acting to never reveal myself. Hmm. You know what I mean? And so I would like to put more Korean American stories into my work, not necessarily my own specific story. And I would be more inclined to tell the story of the generation prior to mine, my mother and father's generation. That would interest me, not necessarily my own.
How much did they talk about that era, that generation?
They're not inclined to share a whole lot. So you have to poke and prod. And like a lot of immigrants, I think that they came to America and said, that chapter's done. But as they get older, I think the book is opening some more. So, yeah.
Thanks for sharing. Had a lot of fun. And I'll wait for Harold and Kumar 4. And if you go to space, damn it, I'm coming after you. I want residuals.
Oh, you got it, man. You got it. Hopefully some exec was listening in their Tesla.
John, thank you.
Take care.
New episodes of That Scene are available exclusively on Amazon Music. And all of season one is available wherever you get your podcasts. So make sure you follow us in the Amazon Music app. That Scene with Dan Patrick, created, hosted, produced by me. Our showrunner and producer is Brendan Pike, edited by Nathan Moody. The show is executive produced by Paul Anderson, Nick Pinella, and Andrew Greenwood. Our associate producers, Bill Ryan and Marvin Prince. That Scene is an Amazon original and a production of Dan Patrick Productions.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to That Scene with Dan Patrick ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.